God, by your love, our eyes are opened, our hunger fed, our sin forgiven, and our wickedness overthrown. May we so celebrate your blessing as ambassadors of your gladness, that by our hands the fragments of community may be gathered up and the lost welcomed home. Through Jesus our Redeemer. Amen. My father was always known as Manny, but my wife Cheryl prefers, and I prefer, for me, the more formal, Emmanuel. No one has called me Junior since high school. We raised two daughters in this house, first Janet and then Nina. For three generations, starting with my old man, right off the boat from Malta, 1930, bottom of the Depression, we have been in the fruit business. The American dream, people sometimes say to me. First a cot near Haymarket, then the store on Mount Auburn Street. Now a plant in Chelsea. We just kept going. Everything fresh. Fruits, later vegetables, now dairy. We service hotels, restaurants, K-12, hospitals, and some retail. Chances are you drive around Boston, you've been in traffic behind one of our trucks. You know our name and our logo. My father died in 1980. And some days I wonder what he would say about us now. We have four distinct lines of business. My eldest daughter, Janet, runs operations, and her husband, Tim, is director of sales and marketing. She met him while she was sailing through the McDonough School of Business at Georgetown, which was right after she sailed through her undergraduate at Tufts. I guess this is the American dream. I don't know. I have more time on my hands lately, and some days I wonder about all of this. Of course I've worked hard. Cheryl's worked harder maybe than I have. But this business was given to us, and even my dad got some support from other people to get going. Every day our privately owned trucks make their deliveries on public roads. So I think about that. And some days I think that I just happened to be standing in the street one day with a bucket in my hand when it started raining gold. We hit everything just right. The American dream. When the New England Hospitality Association gave me and Legal Seafoods their Lifetime Achievement Awards in 2000, that's what all the speeches were about, the American dream. But I'm not really sure of my place in that. The older I get, the more I like what Ebenezer Scrooge has to say in A Christmas Carol, the 1938 Reginald Owen version. Everything for everyone, he says, at the end of everything, as all those cute little Cratchits rip into their packages. That's a kind of dream, too. Anyway, some nights, Cheryl and I are out to dinner at the Chateau, and I look across the dining room, and I see a pretty girl squeezing a lemon wedge into her Diet Coke, and I think, God is good. Eat fruit, my dad used to say to everyone. It's good for you, and it's really good for me. So last Saturday morning, Nina came home again. Since she left Bennington after her sophomore year in 1998, Nina has followed at least two divine masters. First, that guy on something she called an ashram near New Lebanon, New York. Cheryl and I drove out there once. Nina had access to a ceramic studio, which is what she had been doing in school. But she told us she was trying to learn how to be and not to do. to be and not to do. And she was kind of wrapped up with the group's leader, whose name was Burl. "What else does Burl do?" I asked her. "Well, he's a carpenter," Nina says, "or he could be a carpenter." This was in a diner near the farm where the 24 of them all lived, because we were not allowed onto the property itself. Our visit was too sudden, Nina explained. There had not been time for the community to vote on us. "Well, just be careful," I wanted to say. And I wanted to say, "Oh, my beautiful, trusting daughter, don't sit on any of those could-be chairs." But I didn't. I stopped myself. That was a hard ride home on the pike for me and Cheryl. Cheryl seemed so strangely calm about everything, unfazed. "Emmanuel," she said, "they have to go away. Just because you didn't doesn't mean that they won't. And they are never going to find themselves if every time they look back over their shoulders, they see the family Ford Explorer just coming over the last hill." Now, this was an odd thing for my wife to say, because she has lived in exactly two houses in her own life. The one her father built and the one we built here. So then there was the fire on the ashram, and then Nina moved to Los Angeles in 2003. Then there was the Church of Scientology with all of this talk about achieving clearness. Nina has done some low-level work in Hollywood in film production. Friends of hers from Bennington got her in. "You know, Karen Black was a Scientologist," Cheryl told me, "and John Travolta and Tom Cruise." I'm like, "Great, are you trying to make me feel better?" Nina has been surviving, though. We've been out there a few times. We helped her pay for her condo in Studio City, which bugged her big sister no end. Nina has come home exactly 3 times in the last 10 years. Once was for Janet and Tim's wedding. But who she sees and what she does, the everyday stuff, the real importance, we just haven't seen. None of this was what I expected, what I dreamed about for her, for us. So, last Saturday morning, Nina came home. It's kind of like hell was breaking loose already, because we were having a Stana stair lift installed. Cheryl has osteoarthritis, and I have felt for some time that until Nina was settled, really settled, I just didn't want to give this place up. I just want some place for everyone to go. Janet and Tim want us to sell, want us to move into one of those new condo towers in Boston. "All on one floor," Janet keeps saying, "blocks from the best hospitals in the world." To which I'm sort of saying, nah. So Janet and Tim are here because since I turned 70, my eldest daughter insists on being present whenever we have work being done on the property. So these two guys from Stana have taken over the foyer. This is custom work. Everything has been pre-sized. When I hear Janet say to one of them in a tone of voice that sometimes makes me wonder, she says, "My parents are concerned about irreparable damage to the wainscoting." Irreparable damage to the wainscoting? Does that even sound like me? Besides, the chair rail doesn't even go near the wall. It's anchored to the treads. And besides, nothing's irreparable. I believe that. Nothing's irreparable. I'm reading the Globe in the kitchen when I hear her say it. I put the paper down. I start to get up. Cheryl lifts up her hand and mouths the word, "Don't," at me. "Emmanuel," she says. "It looks like the feed is empty." So it is. I look at it, stuck there to the window. Nothing left for the birds. I look at the last piles of the late winter snow at the bottom of our long driveway. I look at the big, dead March lawn. I'll do it later, I say. It's past 10. I should go up and get showered and dressed. So, 15 minutes later, I'm upstairs shaving when I hear Cheryl yell, "Nina!" I look out the window, and there's an Uber in the driveway and two big wheelie suitcases on the sidewalk, and the driver is lifting a big canvas duffel out of the truck. No warning. And there is my youngest child looking up at our house. She looks pale and exhausted. So with half my face still covered in Barbasol, I pull a towel around my waist and I run down the stairs. I practically knock the two Stana guys over on the way down. Janet is still in the foyer holding the stair lift owner's manual, one finger keeping her place. "Geez, Jag, your dignity," she says. That sets me off too, just a bit. "Leave Jesus alone," I say. "Since when was Jesus all about dignity?" And there I am, almost naked on the front walk. The Uber is backing down the driveway, the kid driving it gaping at me, a paunchy little old man wearing nothing but a Field Crest towel. "I took the red eye," says Nina. "Surprise." "You could have called, you could have texted," says Janet. "One of us would have come into Logan to get you." She and Tim and her mother are standing in the open door. Nina doesn't answer. I'm hugging her, and there's shaving cream all over her hair. She says, "I'm so tired." So Tim and I pick up the luggage, and in we go. Janet says carefully, "That's a lot of stuff. You around for a while?" Nina says, "I really don't know." The Stana guys are by this time testing out the chair itself, but kind of watching the whole thing unspool. I'm glad they're here because I'm thinking, as long as there are professionals with us, nothing's gonna really blow. Cheryl's talking to Nina about clean sheets in the upstairs linen closet, about her taking a nice long nap in her own bed, about all of us going to lunch later at the Chateau. Now, the Chateau has a French name, but the food is Italian. It's your basic red sauce place, go figure. "Great," says Janet to her little sister. "You just get some rest. No explanation necessary, right? Then later on, we'll all go out and make nice and slaughter the fatted chicken palm." Okay, I say, "enough. If it's okay with everyone, I'm gonna go up and finish shaving the other half of my ugly old mug." "Why don't you take this up, sir?" says one of the Stana guys. The chair has just glided down to a smooth, silent halt at the newel post. So I sit in this chair. I put my bare feet on this little platform. I have the longest, ugliest toes in the world. And there they are, on full display. The button's on the armrest. With guidance from the Stana guy, I press it. And Cheryl and Tim start to laugh. Nina is just kind of peering at it all like she just woke up or something. And Janet says, and walks away towards the kitchen. 3 hours of installation, and this thing feels so solid. My family watches me as I go slowly up and up and up, right around that showy custom curve. I start to laugh myself. This place is bedlam, I think. And this is where we live. now. Not that I have ever said this to anyone else, but the reason I sometimes take so long in the bathroom is that that's where I like to think and pray. It could be that the running water relaxes me, or that the shaving is so mindless and repetitive. But last Saturday morning, while I was putting the foam back on my face to finish, I started thinking about love. I love my daughters. I love my son-in-law. I love Cheryl. That I am loved by them means my life. But how can I say this to you? As I have aged, I wonder, is this all? I have loved. I am loved. I started thinking about Nina in that diner in upstate New York. That was so long ago now. I'm tired of doing, she said. I want to be. So, I finish shaving, and I wipe off my face, and I think, is love something we just do? Is love something we have to spend our lives either doling out or chasing, earning even? Or is love something we are? Is love something we are? How can I be love? For my family, for those who work with us, even for strangers, even for you. I think I need to think about this some more.